This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
Welcome to the Diehards right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. It's Bobby Krivitsky and John Lyons on the mics. We got Charles Carter producing a loaded lineup for you tonight. We're going to talk about the buzz being generated by the NBA in-season tournament. We're obviously going to talk a lot of football, from picks to the college football playoff, MLB free agency, the hot stove. I don't know if I'd say it's heating up, John, but it is getting warmer.
At least a little bit. We're seeing some lower-level movement. You know, guys like Sonny Gray signing deals, Luis Severino earlier today. So the big fish are still out there, but we're seeing at least a little bit of movement.
And the rumors are starting to percolate surrounding the big fish. And then within this hour, we have sports handicapper John Ryan, one of the best in the business, coming on to put more money into your pockets and your bank accounts. But we start in the NFL. As is tradition when the two of us are on the mic, we like to do our takeaways from the week that was. And so, John, give me one of those at the top of your big board from this week in the
NFL.
Yeah,
it's funny because going into this weekend, there were quite a few games, and I'm like, oh, these are going to be duds. And we ended up having a great and compelling weekend of football. I'm going to start Philly and Buffalo.
Yep.
You know, best game of the weekend, 37-34 win for Philly. How about Jalen Hurts accounting for five total touchdowns, two of them rushing, including the game winner? Yet it was Buffalo with 505 yards of offense in this game. Second week in a row, the Eagles overcome a 17-7 halftime deficit. And the way this game ended, with Philly taking the lead after that fourth quarter, interception scoring three plays later, but then the Gabe Davis touchdown with 152 to go, and then the Jake Elliott field goal at the end of the fourth quarter. And then in overtime, Buffalo gets a field goal, and of course, Philly scores. I mean, this was just two really good teams. And I know Buffalo might not be the heavy Super Bowl favorite contender type team they were last year and the year before. They're still a really good football team with a lot of talent. And then, of course, the Eagles are one of the best teams in the league. Just going at it for 60 minutes. It was just really impressive and a lot of fun to watch.
It absolutely was. My question to you, John, do you look at this strictly as the Eagles once again weren't at their best and they were able to get it done, including quickly erasing a 10-point deficit in the fourth quarter? Or do you put more weight into their defense struggling to stop a Buffalo offense that really has not performed well this season,
well,
and recently fired their OC?
It's interesting because I do put some into them struggling to stop Buffalo, because Philly's in the midst of a four-week stretch where 2 weeks ago they played KC on a Monday night, then they played Buffalo at home, now they're going to play San Francisco, and the week after the San Francisco game they play Dallas. You could make the case that is the toughest four-game stretch for any team in the league this season. Now, they're already 2-0, which is good. So even if they lose the next two, they still go 500 through that stretch. The problem is San Francisco sitting there at 8-3. If San Francisco wins and then Dallas wins, all of a sudden San Fran's the one seed in the NFC. So if I'm Philly, I'm a little worried about that San Francisco offense, given that I just gave up 505 yards to Buffalo.
Yeah, and Brock Purdy looks like he's got his mojo back.
Yeah, that bye week came at perfect time.
I think that did well, and not to mention having Debo in the mix, Trent Williams healthy. So they lost Hufanga on defense. That could help Jalen Hurts and company, but that offense is starting to roll again. They made light work of the Seahawks on Thanksgiving. It's going to be interesting to see how Philly holds up in what really could determine, quite frankly, who wins the Super Bowl. These are the two best teams in the league, in my estimation. And if the Niners go to the link and get a win, I think it looks pretty good for them to get the one seed, be the team with the bye. Philly should still be able to get to the conference championship, but the location might have some relevance to the outcome.
Yeah, I would agree with you that I think these are the two best teams in the league. And let's not forget, last year in the conference championship game, San Fran had literally no quarterback. That was a 7-7 game midway through the second quarter with Christian McCaffrey playing quarterback. So it's 7-7, Josh Johnson fumbles, game kind of turns there, and it ends up the final score looks like a blow, but if you peel away and say, well, if Brock Purdy doesn't tear his UCL on the first possession, maybe this is a close game, maybe even the Niners win, which is something you normally wouldn't say about a game that was a multi-touchdown blowout. But I think that was such a huge determining factor. I think you're right. Now, if that game is in San Francisco this year, and if they're fully healthy again, I would pick them in a game to beat the Eagles. So I'm fascinated by this San Francisco matchup coming up, which I know we're going to talk about later. But you're right, Philly, this was a win for Philly. That was a great win because you came back from a halftime deficit. You fought it out with a great team after you're on a short week, and you win the game. But it's also a practically a big game in the standings because if they lose that game, then you lose to the 49ers, and it's tied, and they're ahead of you tiebreakers. So this was not just a great win emotionally, character, all that stuff. It was a great win for the standings.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk to John Ryan about this Eagles-Niners game. Again, he's coming on within this hour telling you what to put your money on in that matchup. I want to talk about the Chicago Bears now. I don't know about you. I found that game to be entertaining between them and the Vikings. I'm not saying it was good football, but entertaining nonetheless. So a different category. Thank you, Charles Carter. Always got my back. My question to you, though, is the Bears are poised to get the number one pick via the Panthers. Have you seen enough from Justin Fields to continue with him, or do you go take Caleb Williams?
Might have to start calling you Sickos Committee Bobby after enjoying that Monday nighter.
I'm applying.
I really think the next six games they have left is going to determine Justin Fields' future in Chicago, because not only are they going to have likely the number one overall pick from Carolina, they'll have another potential top 10 pick from their own poor season. So if Justin Fields, this last month and a half, let's say he plays great and he looks like a franchise guy, then all of a sudden you can use that number one pick on whoever you think the best player. Maybe it's Marvin Harrison Jr. Maybe you trade it down. Maybe it's Olufoshinu out of Penn State, a tackle, whoever. And then you have another top 10 pick that you can use on another potential elite prospect. And all of a sudden, this rebuild that looked far off is totally energized. So I think that's going to make a big difference. But unless he plays like a high-end quarterback these next 6 weeks, I'm looking at Caleb Williams or whoever they like most, but I'm looking at Caleb Williams as the next quarterback of the Bears.
Yeah, I think that's the direction to go in here because Fields, what's frustrating to me is, for example, the opening drive of that game against the Vikings, he makes some really impressive plays, including with his legs, buying time, rolling out, and then a nice throw on the run as he's headed towards the sideline. But the turnovers are a killer, and that one that really should have cost them the game, where he takes off. It looks like it's a nice run, but it doesn't tuck the ball away. It gets punched out. The Vikings go down and take the lead because of that. It's just, I don't know if I've seen enough progression while recognizing his talent. And as you get closer to an extension, if you believe in Caleb Williams and you can also reset the clock, that seems like the move to me. You can trade Fields for a bunch of whatever you want in return, namely picks. You've got another. I think it's going to end up being a top five selection.
Sure.
So to me, you're absolutely right. They don't have to make this decision today. Fields' performance will dictate it. But I'm looking at it as if they feel like Caleb Williams has a higher ceiling, go that route.
And I think a guy who actually works against Justin Fields in this situation is a fellow Ohio State alum, C.J. Stroud. I mean, he comes in at the number two overall pick. He's not just Rookie of the Year right now. He's in the MVP conversation down in Houston. And if you're Chicago and you look at it like, hey, Caleb Williams is going to be like C.J. Stroud because he's such a unique talent, and he's more of a talent now than Justin Fields was when he came out. Because let's not forget, Justin Fields, I loved him in college, and I thought he would be a good pro. He was the fourth quarterback taken. It's a little different than being the first quarterback taken talent-wise. Same time, I mean, we've had that conversation with Mac Jones in New England here a bunch. But I look at it as if they feel like Caleb Williams can be C.J. Stroud, then go for it. But I think these next 6 weeks is going to determine whether or not he's the star. I mean, and he's got to play at a high, high level. Like, if he just plays like he has been, not the guy. You know, a little bit better, not the guy. He's got to play at a C.J. Stroud level these next 6 weeks in order for them to not take Caleb Williams.
You're exactly right, because I'm not saying Fields is the primary reason for his inconsistencies, but that's a frustrating reality to live with. And again, as you get closer to an extension and you see what C.J. Stroud's doing in Houston, I think it leans towards going with Caleb Williams, starting anew, and resetting that clock on the rookie quarterback contract. Speaking of C.J. Stroud, it leads perfectly, John, into my next takeaway, which is the Houston Texans play the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is supposed to be a year where the Jaguars are at least capable of getting to the AFC Championship game. Not only does it not look like that, but this Texans team with Stroud, they really have been impressive to the point where they only lose by a field goal to the Jags on Sunday. Do you think this AFC South is about to start running through Houston and not the Jaguars?
Yeah, and a field goal that bounced off the crossbar, yeah, which would have tied it. I will say this, too. I think we're going to be looking at the AFC South in 2025 the way, or at the way we look at the AFC North now, like one of the best divisions in football. Because anyway, the Colts right now are in playoff position without Anthony Richardson. The Jaguars are a top three seed, even if we have questions about them. And Houston looks like they're a year ahead of schedule in their rebuild and their potential playoff team. I mean, that's three playoff teams right there in that division. And Tennessee, I know they probably have a long rebuild ahead of them, but they're really well coached. They have a good structure there. So
they might have the quarterback in Levis.
And they may have the quarterback in Levis, exactly. So, you know, I think, to me, this was more about that Houston team being ahead of schedule. I mean, C.J. Stroud, 304 yards, two touchdowns. But what stood out to me most, 10 different pass catchers. So he's spreading the ball around. And I'm a huge Tank Dell guy, but he's spreading the ball all over the place. Trevor Lawrence, obviously 364 yards. He played great. But C.J. Stroud, to me, and that Texans team, this was more about them being ahead of schedule in their rebuild. And Jacksonville, you made an interesting point because, you know, they're top three seed in the AFC. They have been pretty much all year, but they lose a tough one at home to Kansas City in week two. They get smoked by San Francisco at home, you know, a few weeks back. Is this a team that is really good but not great? Because I feel like if they were a great team, maybe they win that Kansas City game earlier in the year, or at least that San Francisco game is a lot closer. So that also gives me a little bit of wonder about them.
Yeah, I look at a win streak that really helped them get to 8-3, where they went to London, they had an easy game against the Titans, then they stayed out there and the Bills came, that was an advantage, then they come back and get a cupcake at home. So that's three wins that were kind of manufactured and gift-wrapped. I haven't been impressed with the Jags. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We'll talk college football up next.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insiders Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. It's Bobby Krivitsky and John Lyons on the mics. We got Charles Carter producing. It's time to talk college football. We started with NFL takeaways. Now we get to react to the playoff rankings. And John, because of our schedules, it's been a long time. I don't think that we've had an on-air dialogue about the college football rankings yet this season.
Yeah, we have not. At least the college football playoff rankings we haven't talked about yet this year. So I'm excited to dive into it because there's a lot of chaos scenarios, if you will, Bobby. So we got a lot to get to here.
So I assume we're both in agreement. Georgia number one, how could they not be?
Yeah.
And then number two, Michigan, they earned it to the point that I ask you, everyone, it was fair to question, how good is this team?
Yeah.
Because the strength of schedule was weak until this Ohio State game. Do you look at them now and say they have a case for being the best team in college football?
Yeah, I mean, Michigan only played two ranked teams this year. One of them was Ohio State, right? So very soft schedule. I think they're the clear number two team to me. And I think Georgia, it's funny, early in the year we were like, oh, you know, it's so hard to three-peat. It hasn't happened since the 1930s. Remember Georgia started off not bad, but not quite as dominant. Of all these teams in the playoff field, they're the only one with a top 10 offense and defense. And they've won, what, 30 games in a row? Like, to me, Georgia's the clear one. But I do think Michigan is the clear number two. And I think they have national championship potential. Like, I could see them maybe beating Georgia in a game. I mean, to be a hell of a lot more competitive than TCU last year. But I think Georgia's the clear one. Michigan's the clear two.
So Kirby Smart might point to a different game. But to me, I know that they blew out Florida. It really felt like this Bulldogs team hit their stride, starting with that win over Missouri. I think that might have been Carson Beck's best performance of the season when you factor in the quality of the opponent and that defense that he was going up against. That felt like, okay, this Georgia team isn't just winning games because they're better. There's really something here that feels like it's translatable no matter who the opponent is. So I do look at the Bulldogs. They're the best team. I want to stay on Michigan for just one more topic, which is these two faced each other in the playoff 2 years ago, and the Wolverines got smacked.
Yep.
Obviously, the rosters are much different. But do you look at it and fear that reality happening again if they play?
So I could see Georgia winning by, you know, a touchdown or two, but I think it would be much more like Georgia's game versus Ohio State last year in a different way because Ohio State's more spread out. They're going to throw the ball over the place. Michigan is so much sturdier up front on both sides of the ball than when they played in that playoff game. And even that playoff game, they still had Aiden Hutchinson then. Obviously, number two overall pick in the draft, great player. But I think across the board, they are more solid on both sides of the ball, which they need to have. And I think their quarterback play is so much better than 2 years ago. So I think you put that together, like, hey, what if I had a gun to my head right now and pick the game, I'd probably still pick Georgia. But I think it would be a lot more competitive. I mean, remember a couple of years ago, like, James Cook just did whatever he wanted coming out of the backfield. Like, I don't think you would see that again if Georgia played Michigan.
Totally agree. And then it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the rematch between Washington and Oregon. That will determine who gets that spot. You can't put them both in, and obviously you won't if the Huskies go 2-0 against the Ducks. I mean, Bo Nix, he looks like he's got a strong case for the Heisman, even though I think Jaden Daniels deservedly gets it. But he's having another excellent season. And Oregon, John, I thought they outplayed Washington for more of that game despite the loss. It's a chance at revenge and to make the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, it was a 36-33 game, came right down to the wire. And Washington, they have four wins over ranked teams. Oregon has three, the one separators. Their head-to-head matchup. I think the winner of this game is in the playoff either way. So if Washington wins, obviously two wins over Oregon, they'd be undefeated. They're at, but if number five Oregon beats number three Washington for the Pac-12 title, and sadly, Bobby, maybe the last Pac-12 title ever. But if Oregon beats Washington there, and if you look at what Dan Lanning has built, and I don't know if the committee takes this into account, but Dan Lanning played such a major role in building these powerhouse Georgia teams. He's now building that at Oregon, and the committee's supposed to look at who are the best four teams. Yeah, they would have one loss. I think if they beat Washington, though, you've got to put them in.
Yeah, I think we're both in agreement here that whoever wins that game is going to the CFP. Here's where it gets spicy, though. Florida State, without Jordan Travis, is that just a placeholder?
I think so, and it's funny. There's never been a Power 5 conference undefeated champion to be left out of the playoff. I could see Florida State being the first one, and it's really because of Travis. I mean, you look at opening night, they play number 5 LSU. They dominate that second half and route to a big win. They've been really good all season long. But that, taking him out of the equation, I think makes them no longer one of the four best teams. Now, are they one of the six or seven best teams in the country still? Probably. But I felt like even last week against Florida, that game was closer than it needed to be.
They barely won.
Yeah, that was closer than I wouldn't be shocked, Bobby, if Louisville wins this game. I mean, Louisville's a top, they're a top 15 team all year in the country. I would not be shocked. What are they, 10 right now, I think, Louisville?
I think so.
Yeah, like top 15 all year, 10 right now. Like, they're more than capable of winning a game against a backup quarterback in an ACC championship game. So I wouldn't be shocked if Louisville wins, but even if they don't, right? So Oregon and Washington, winners in, losers out. Now you look at Ohio State, who frankly, Ohio State's resume, if you want to go that, I think it's more impressive than Florida State. Florida State beat one top 10 team in LSU opening weekend. Ohio State's beaten two, and their one loss is to the team currently ranked two. So two top 10 wins and a loss to the number two team in the country. And then Texas, who beat Alabama. I mean, Texas and Alabama both have one loss. If Texas wins the Big 12, I think they're the team in instead of Florida State.
Okay, so here's the wrinkle that I know a lot of people are going to pull their hair out if it happens.
Oh, I will. I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, you do. If Alabama beats Georgia, they're in my book. If I was a one-man committee, then they take Florida State's spot. The Seminoles, there's a first for everything. They don't deserve to get in because of the Travis. There's so much talent on that team still, but it's about the four best, and they didn't survive the war of attrition, unfortunately.
The only thing I would say,
the Ducks and Huskies are going to cannibalize themselves.
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off here, Bobby. The only thing I would say, would you put in a one-loss Alabama team that beat Georgia over a Pac-12 champion with one loss if it's Oregon? Like, then maybe you can get spicy there, keep Florida State in, have Bama in, or have Bama and Texas in, and they're, like, because like I said, if Washington wins, undefeated Pac-12 champ, beating Oregon twice, they're in. The only thing I could maybe see is if the committee looks at it and says, well, when Bama played Texas, they didn't have quarterback figured out. Now they have quarterback figured out. If they beat Georgia, do you put them, like, that's the only, it's tough, though. It's tough.
Keep in mind that when Bama lost to Texas, they did not play well. They had two touchdowns called back because of self-inflicted penalties. And so you look at a team that is starting to hit their stride, And they did get lucky against Auburn. They stole that game. And
it's another thing. That's an unranked Auburn team, though. They barely beat.
But it is the Iron Bowl.
Right.
And
no,
it was at Jordan Hare. Funky things happen in that rivalry, especially for the road team. And so, yeah, if the punt returner doesn't slip, and then they basically won on a Hail Mary, a long fourth and goal. So, yes, they were lucky to survive to keep their playoff hopes intact. And it's an if. Georgia should beat Alabama.
Yeah.
But if they don't, that to me is more deserving than Texas, even if they win their conference championship. The Buckeyes, who won't be in it in the Big Ten, and the Ducks and Huskies, I think it's one or the other. There's a case for both, and Florida State, I've already eliminated.
I would love an Ohio State, Alabama, like bowl, like Citrus Bowl or Orange Bowl, though. I'm just saying, that would be fun. Yeah, like, I agree. Like, I think if Georgia loses, how far do they go down to three?
Yeah.
Like, because I, you know, like Michigan would be one, assuming they win. Georgia's three, so then just.
You could even argue they still deserve to be two.
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on Washington. If Washington wins and Georgia loses, I think Washington's the two. If Oregon wins, then I think Georgia's the two. So really, like, I think we have some semblance of Georgia-Michigan Pac-12 winner, and it's just, like, I would lean towards Texas taking Florida State's spot. And if Bama blows out Georgia, then maybe I put Bama in. But even a close win, it's tough to put them in over a Texas team that's 3-1 versus ranked teams, including a win in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, it's totally fair, and they'll obviously have the head-to-head. But I don't know, beating Oklahoma State to me to get to 12-1 is less impressive than winning the SEC championship and having the same record, beating Georgia to do it. I don't think it needs to be convincing for the Tide, but again, they didn't look great against Auburn. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to pull this one off, and if they don't, there's no chance they get in. I do look at that fourth spot, though, and there's four teams firmly in the mix where it's up for grabs right now.
And I feel like Ohio State, like if you really look at Ohio State's resume, like we just talked about, they're getting left out of this conversation completely.
Yeah.
But let's say Georgia wins, Michigan wins, and you know whoever the Pac-12, but let's say Florida State loses and Texas loses, all of a sudden Ohio State has a path to that four seed. Like, that to me is where Ohio State is sitting there at six. They are not going to play this weekend, and yet there's a pretty reasonable path for them to get in the college football playoff.
Would you hold their resume against them? They have a win against number 9 Notre Dame at the time. They squeaked it out at the end, and they beat number 7 at the time, Penn State, by 8 points. That's really the only impressive victories on their resume.
But I think, and look, it is, but Michigan's only beat two ranked teams, right? And I know one of them was Ohio State. I mean, Georgia's beaten, what, three? So, or four. So, I mean, anywhere from 2 to 3 wins, I think, is you're kind of in the ballpark.
It's still
a fair question, though.
They're still in the mix, and not being able to hurt themselves and lose in the conference championship might help. But ultimately, I don't think the Buckeyes get into the Final Four. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We have sports handicapper John Ryan joining us next on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. It's Bobby Krivitsky and John Lyons on the mics. We got Charles Carter producing. Time to get out to the Progressive Guest Line right now. This program sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Bundle home and auto and save. Visit progressive.com. Joining us right now, sports handicapper, one of the best in the business. You can find his work everywhere, from the Predictive Playbook for Sports Memo to RotoWire, John Ryan. John, thanks for taking the time tonight.
Bobby, it's always a pleasure to join you and John on this show, for sure.
Absolutely, John. We have so many interesting games to cover with you. We're going to start in the world of college football in these conference championship matchups. The last time that Georgia lost was in the SEC title game to Alabama, who they will face once again. Crimson Tide's playoff hopes are on the line. Some places have them as 5-point dogs. Others, it's 6 to 6.5, including FanDuel is the latter. What's your recommendation for our audience from a betting perspective on who to back or what to put your money on in this game?
Well, Bobby, I'm targeting the SEC championship game with number 8 Alabama taking on number 1 Georgia. The line is Georgia -6, but the total is 54.5, and I really like the over in this matchup quite a bit. The over In fact, by one of my best algorithms in my database, consisting of more than 5,000 of them that I created over almost 30 years now. And this one has gone 21-9 with one push for 70% winners since 2006. The requirements are simple. Bet over in the conference championship game. The total in the game exceeds the average of both teams' points allowed by at least 20. I hope that made sense.
It does.
Now,
we're with you.
Down a bit further into the database and filter games that had a total of fewer than 60 points. The over bet has gone a perfect 9-0 since 2006. So Georgia and Alabama ranked first and second in the SEC, allowing 15.8, 17.9 points per game, respectively. Their defenses combined for obviously 33.7 points per game, which is 20.8 points below the posted total of 54.5. So that's where this algorithm kicks in and tells us to play on the over. So they have two really good defenses. Contrary bet, I'm all over this over and live in-game bet. Maybe you do 70% pre-flop and use the remaining 30% at any level under 50 points during the first half of action.
John, the first major conference championship game is actually on Friday night, and it could be the last ever Pac-12 championship game. We'll see what happens with that conference. And I found this line surprising because Washington beat Oregon earlier this year by 3, yet Oregon's favored by 9.5 in this game. John, what do you think made this line be at 9.5, and who do you like in this game?
Well, initially when the line came out, it was so surprising to see Oregon favored by 9.5 against a team that they lost to. Granted, on the road, but it was one of the best played games, I think, of the entire season for college football, with Washington winning that one by 3 points. But to have a team like this favored by 9.5 and now 10 in some books is unprecedented, and it makes me lean on Oregon. However, the numbers, kind of enlighten us, so I'll go through those. Since 2005, teams playing with revenge in their conference championship have gone 15-29 straight up. So that's not so good for Oregon. 18-25-1 for 42% winning bet. Only 14 of these 44 teams have been favored, and they have gone 9-5 straight up, but just 7-7 against the spread. If the game occurred in a Power 5 conference championship, these favorites seeking revenge, 4-2 straight up, 3-2 against the mark. So we don't get much intelligence there. But teams with revenge in a rematch against an undefeated opponent, 1-6 straight up, 2-4-1 push against the number. So I think the market has overreacted a little bit with Oregon and that tremendous offense in their most recent games. And recency bias is a term I love to talk about. And I'm afraid that this number probably is too high.
John, when it comes to Texas and Oklahoma State, there are some outlets that have the Longhorns favored by 15 in this matchup. John and I were talking, John Lyons, obviously, in the last segment about how the Longhorns, to their advantage, they beat Alabama already in the head-to-head. So even though a win against Oklahoma State would be less impressive than a victory over Georgia, do you feel like all Texas has to do is beat the Cowboys, and they're in?
Well, the problem with Texas, guys, is that they have to jump over both Washington and Oregon, unfortunately. So somebody's going to lose that Pac-12 conference championship game. Can Texas have enough momentum from the last two games to impress the committee enough to jump over both of them? Only time will tell, but you guys may remember I had a bet that is not going to cash, but it was Texas and Penn State to make it to the national championship. Obviously, Penn State's not even in the question, in the conversation. But Texas is, and I really like this Texas team. And unfortunately, they're being penalized for a really close loss to Oklahoma. And I think that's really, being overreacted with this. And Texas really beat up Texas Tech last week. I think they're going to do the same thing with Oklahoma State. And I think they should be in.
John, I find the Florida State situation really interesting because if you rewind back to the very first year the college football playoff existed, a team with a third-string quarterback in Ohio State won the national championship, but now Florida sits here with their backup quarterback going into the ACC championship game, undefeated but only favored by 2.5 in a game that will have massive implications on the college football playoff, whether they win or lose. When you look at this 2.5 line, I mean, do you like Florida State here with a backup quarterback, and do you like them in the playoff as well if they win?
Well, again, to repeat myself from like probably about 10 weeks ago, FSU is on my radar as one of the teams to go undefeated, and hopefully do, because that ticket will cash. And you know what? At the end of the day, having a backup quarterback or losing a guy like Jordan Travis is kind of irrelevant, historically speaking, because as you mentioned, we've seen Ohio State get the job done. And I think what is flying under the radar here is a Florida State defense that on my metrics ranks seventh best in the nation. And they really showed it in the second half in Gainesville. This team is more seasoned than any of the teams out there, maybe with the exception of Washington. You may remember in the first week of the year, they took to a neutral site and took down LSU, who was ranked number 5.
Yep.
And honestly, have you ever seen a 3-loss team better than LSU is? 580 yards of offense per game, leading the nation, and Florida State beat them. Then 2 weeks later, they go into Death Valley and beat Clemson. Now, Clemson ended up not being quite as good as we expected, but still a very difficult venue for a team to go in and get a win. So I think they're being discounted, unfortunately, and I think it would be very sad if they go undefeated and the committee would not give them an invite to the college football playoffs.
John, we got just under 3 minutes left here. Let's switch it up and go to the NFL. Game of the week, potentially game of the year, could have Super Bowl implications. The Eagles welcome the Niners to the link. Just looking at it on FanDuel, Philly favored by 2.5, or Philly 2.5 point dogs at home, rather, which is a bit surprising to see. Over under on FanDuel set at 47.5. What do you like from a betting standpoint in this matchup?
Well, I'll make it very quick. I'm on the 49ers, and I hope I'm right with this one. The Eagles have shown that they are one of the most resilient teams we've seen in decades, really. You know, what they did against Buffalo coming back from 10 down, the fourth time they've made a comeback of double digits this year. They've won 5 games where they have been outstatted in the box score. Only Pittsburgh has 6, and that is actually tying the record through 12 weeks going all the way back to 1989. So the Eagles are doing something really special here, and it's very difficult as a pro bettor to fade them because you always have in the back of your head that they're never out of it. They just have that attitude. Jalen Hurts has only lost 2 games in the regular season in his entire career, which that alone is remarkable. Will this be the third one? I think this is the right setup, mainly because the Eagles have gone through this gauntlet of winning record teams, starting with Dallas. Then they played the Chiefs after a bye week. Then they played Buffalo this past week. Now they have this game against the 49ers, who have the second-best record in the NFC, and who are playing with some serious revenge, having lost that game in the playoffs to the Eagles last year. And next week they have to play Seattle. Then they have to play Dallas on the road. Then it kind of gets easy for them with 2 games against the New York Giants and the Arizona Cardinals. But still, the fatigue factor right now for this team, I think, has to be immense. So I think this is a point where they're going to take a loss, but they're still going to win the NFC conference and have this bye week, which is monumentally important. And there is one quick system here, if I have time, Bobby. We're going to bet on favorites that have won 3 of the last 4 games, and the dogs in the matchup has won 8 or more of the last 10 games. This has gone 53-18 straight up, 75%, 49-20.
That's great stuff, John Ryan. We appreciate the insight up against the hard out here. Check out his work at Sports Memo and Predictive Playbook.
You're listening to The Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insiders Bobby Kravitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. It's Bobby Krivitsky and John Lyons on the mics. We got Charles Carter producing. Still looking for amazing gifts at Total Wine and More. I found the best gifts for everyone on my list, including a single barrel bourbon that Dad will love. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only a Total Wine and More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21. John Lyons, the NBA's in-season tournament, it hasn't even reached the knockout stage, let alone gotten to Vegas. And after last night, I would call it a rousing success because this time of year, this league does not generate buzz. It has a hard enough time at any point of generating excitement with its on-court product, and they accomplished both last night.
Yeah, like I think the two biggest times of the year the NBA has buzz is free agency and the playoffs, right? So this is something where they're going up against, you know, what's happening this week? Michigan, Ohio State, then the conference championship games. Obviously, the NFL's in full swing. You have, I guess, a trickle of baseball free agency, if you want to call it that. But you have a lot of other stuff going on in the NHL as well. And last night, a lot of eyes were glued on the Boston Celtics, other places around, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Brooklyn Nets. A lot of eyes were glued on those teams that maybe wouldn't have been there. So, I think overall it's been cooler than I thought it would be. I thought it was going to be stupid, so it's been cooler than I thought. I will say, hate the courts. Yep. Absolutely hate the courts. Just play on the regular courts. You're killing me. You know, maybe put a little decal on the courts, but hate the courts. The other thing, too, and you cover the NBA, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I think it's too spread out. Like, it's like you have a Friday of tournament games, then you wait a week for another Friday of tournament games, then you have some other tournament games, and now, you know, this coming Monday, and we have great games lined up for these, you know, these semifinal, quarterfinal matchups. But I feel like it was too spread out. I would like it where if you just did it, you did all the pool play in a week. Like, you know, a Tuesday night, Thursday night, Saturday night, and then Monday night is your four pool games. Then you have a couple days off. Then the quarterfinals are, you know, a Thursday, semifinals Saturday, and then the following Tuesday, when there's nothing going on, is that, you know, in-season tourney final. So, the courts, hate them. I would tweak the schedule. The actual on-court play, though, has been pretty good and entertaining.
Yeah, so I would say as far as how to restructure it and what about this compared to that, it's a matter of personal taste. I don't think there's a wrong answer there. There is some semblance of spreading it out that I like because it's Tuesdays and Fridays in November, and the in-season tournament courts, some of them I actually do like. I'm not a fan of the peanut butter smudge down the middle that they decided has to be universal on all of them. But
that Chicago one made my eyes hurt.
Yeah, and the courts that are red tend to not go well, and it makes it harder to track the ball if you're watching on TV. At the same time, I like the intentionality of it. It's like when bad PR is actually good press. And so it lets everyone know, okay, this is an in-season tournament game. This matchup is different than the norm. They had to spice up the monotony of an 82-game regular season, especially for the younger generations, to get their attention. They had to do something to be relevant this time of year when, frankly, they really don't matter going up against football. And so I think they've accomplished what they wanted. They have people invested in the on-court product. And this point differential thing, when you have a million scenarios simultaneously unfolding to determine who advances, there was an electricity at TD Garden last night. You could see it unfolding on social media. And so everyone's watching all these games, and because of point differential, it's not the particular matchup that they're invested in. It's seeing who's going to advance as what needs to happen changes from 1 minute to the next.
And I think the best thing about this tournament is now we have a potential extra matchup between the Celtics and the Bucks. We have an extra matchup between Phoenix and LA, and we could have an extra matchup between Boston and LA, Boston and Phoenix, Milwaukee and Phoenix. Like, so we are getting, instead of those teams playing, you know, like twice a year, like usually an East and a West team, now you get maybe a third game. So that to me is really cool. The point differential thing, and we've heard a lot of players recently speak out against this. I mean, even Jaylen Brown last night on the winning team said he wasn't, you know, fully comfortable with it. I don't love the point differential thing. I know you got to have some sort of tiebreaker, so I get it. I do. I wish there was a better one because first of all, I thought it was kind of awkward when they were doing Hacka Drummond up 25. Yeah. Like that was, but also what worries me is, and it didn't happen, thank goodness, but Tatum played the final 9:33 of that game last night. What if he breaks his ankle, you know, with a minute to go in a 25-point game? Like, oh, it's the in-season tourney, but, like, if that messes with your chances to win an NBA title in June, like, that is what's much – and I know I'm stating the obvious, but what's much more important? The NBA finals in June, the conference finals in May? If an injury in the in-season tournament – because, look, most injuries sustained during the in-season tournament would heal by the playoffs, but there are some that wouldn't. And that's what worries me with the point differential. Part of it is, like, I'm not opposed to running up the score if you're just playing the game. Like, you know, we're in New England, the 07 Patriots, they were just playing football. I had no problem with it. If the Celtics, in early November, when they beat the Pacers by, what was it, 41 points or 45 points, but they were just playing basketball and the bench guys were hitting shots. Now it's like, hey, we're intentionally targeting Andre Drummond, we're intentionally targeting this score mark. You know, we're going to, that to me, I didn't love. And I don't know if there's a better solution, but I hope there is.
If you bring your starters back in the fourth quarter, up by almost 30, and one of your best players gets injured and lost for the season, you're a clown show.
Yeah.
You deserve to get laughed at, quite frankly, and you brought it on yourself. So the point differential thing and the players across the board talking about how they have mixed emotions about it and they don't like how it feels like disrespecting the game and their opponent, I'm totally with them. I think most people are. Billy Donovan said yesterday, emphatically said, I'm sure the league will look into this moving forward.
And it is, and in fairness, it's the first time they've done this. So, like, I talked about the courts. I talked about wanting it over a two-week span. You know, we're talking, like, there are going to be some kinks they have to work out.
And to your point, I think that's at the root of how you solve it. You make the tournament longer, that this is so condensed that the point differential matters so greatly. You still need to capture that electricity, that point differential is the driving force of. So there needs to be another wrinkle, but I think the catalyst will be extend the tournament. And it's another way to keep things fresh at this juncture in the season.
And I think we even, in the consolation games, if you want to call it that, we have an extra matchup between the Spurs and the T-Wolves. Like, that's a lot of fun, too. Like, to me, the biggest thing, like, the players are maybe trying a little harder and the fans are more into it. But, like, I'm going to get to watch an extra matchup between the Suns and the Lakers. Like, that's cool. And I assume one of them will beat Sacramento and go to the in-season tournament final, whatever you want, whatever it's called, the cup, whatever. But one of them will get there, and then I'm going to get an extra matchup between one of those teams and Milwaukee or Boston. Like, I think that to me is my favorite part.
And what we're seeing is a refreshing reminder, these are the most competitive people on the planet. The prize for some of them, and in particular, the best players, so those who have the most impact on the outcome, is not that compelling. $500,000.
Yeah.
And it means a lot. There's no such thing as too much money. I'm sure Jaylen Brown would rather have that in his pocket than not. At the same time, you can look at his endorsement deals, his NBA contract, and figure things out there, right? But when you just tell them, hey, you're in a competition, they flip a switch. And these games across the board have been compelling. And that's not always the case at this time of year. I think it really is because they're thrown into what they're told is a competition. They want to go win it.
And I think these games are valuable for down the line for teams like Boston and Phoenix and Milwaukee that have new major pieces. And I know Phoenix is, you know, Beal's been out. They've had injuries. But in theory, like the Celtics, Drew Holiday is playing key crunch time minutes with Tatum and Brown. And I know Porzingis isn't there, but you're one of these pieces. Their bench guys are playing key crunch time minutes in a higher pressure situation than a typical regular season game, right? Dame Lillard is playing with Giannis in higher pressure minutes. So now when they get to those minutes late in the regular season or the playoffs, it's not the first time they've done it together. And I think that, for especially for teams coming together, is actually one of the sneaky, most valuable pieces of this.
It's huge. It's a playoff simulation. You can even shorten your rotation to what you want it to look like in the postseason. And then the other side of the coin is that's how a team like the Celtics, the Sixers, whoever can do it at the top of the bracket. For the Indiana Pacers, Tyrese Haliburton said it, he doesn't get to play on national TV. The Pacers don't get that kind of spotlight. Now they're in the quarterfinals against Boston on national TV. They have a chance to go to Vegas where it's going to be all eyes on them. So this is a huge opportunity for teams who aren't competing for the NBA title, especially if they're in smaller markets.
And I'm glad you said small markets. I was just going to say, I mean, there's eight teams in this, and three of them are from small markets, Sacramento, you know, Indiana, and New Orleans. Like, this is three small market teams right up there with the big boys and the big, and I think that's a cool feature too.
Yeah, it's definitely nice to see. Let me ask you this. Are you in favor of, at some point, putting the stakes to have relevance to the play-in tournament or the playoffs.
No, I think it's okay where it is. We're in November here. Like, I think it's okay where it is.
I agree. I would like to see stakes that are more compelling, especially to the viewers, than that $500,000 that go to the teams. Stick with us here on the Diehards. When we come back, we are going to dive into a whole slew of topics, including more NFL, in hour number two on Sports Map Radio Network.